Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And we hope you had a great weekend. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Good news, bad news, and just otherwise crazy news for conservatives today. And the good martini today might better be classified as could be worse martini or some other verification of where we stand with the situation in Libya. Obviously, it's the dominant story ever since we found out on late Thursday night that the UN Security Council was going to move forward on this use of force resolution, the no-fly zone, strikes. The president talked about it on Friday. We saw strikes starting as early as Saturday. There's a lot of different ways to look at this. Jim, I think you're a little more bullish on it than I am, so I'll let you lay out why you believe that this is the best option for the good martini today.
Sure. Some would say bullish, and others would just say plain bull in what I'm saying. But this way, as someone who believes, as a general principle in American foreign policy, that if we know a massacre is about to occur, we should try to do something to stop it, even though we can't save everyone, even though we can't be the world's policeman. Benghazi is, as of now, safe, and we know that Gaddafi and his forces wanted to go in there and kill, make an example of that city and kill lots of people. So the good news is that massacre has not occurred. We're finding reports of dead mercenaries, and I don't know about you, Greg. I always like knowing that mercenaries will not be around to collect their paychecks.
Right.
And then the third item, you're watching the reaction on the left, and you know they're tearing their hair out, and I understand it's given Michael Moore an eating disorder. you can tell he's torn up about this. That in a way, I kind of see this as something of a on some level, this is a vindication of the Bush doctrine. In that here you have Barack Obama, who ran explicitly against the Iraq war, who ran completely against this. And he's using military force against a Middle Eastern tyrant who is threatening his own citizens and who was threatening terrorism. We forget that Gaddafi was talking about blowing up passenger jets over the Mediterranean if there were strikes against him. He didn't go to Congress. There's only this fig leaf of a UN resolution. And basically what I like seeing, and the signal sent all around the world, that folks, if you start talking about blowing up passenger airliners, even President Apology Tour is going to come and unleash the U.S. Air Force against you. So this is not the pacifist, unifying, kumbaya, messiah presidency that Obama wanted. There are people saying he's been kind of dragged, kicking and screaming into this. I think in a way this should dispel the notion that there will be a U.S. president anytime soon, perhaps in our lifetimes, who will not have to use military force against threats to ourselves and innocent civilians. It kind of, you know, in a way, liberals can argue against it, but even their man has now, you know, gone out and you know, acted under those principles. So, you know, I don't know how George W. Bush is feeling today, but I think he's probably got some reason to nod in satisfaction.
Yeah, Michael Moore has now demanded that President Obama return his Nobel Peace Prize, and even Louis Farrakhan has asked, who the heck do you think you are, or words to that effect, for Obama to go in there. So if those—
And Greg, while you and Andy McCarthy and Jim Manzi and all these other folks are folks who are skeptics, who I respect a great deal, don't you just kind of figure that if Farrakhan and Michael Moore hate this, it must be a good thing? Isn't that kind of a good, useful indicator?
Well, I think it gives Obama the platform to say that he's a moderate on this issue, that his base in certain circumstances, or certainly the far left, is upset with this. That means he must be staking out a moderate position here, so it could be good for him politically, although the actual issues involved here are far more important in the near term than the politics of this. My biggest issue with this is just how it was all constructed. We talked about this a little bit on Friday when we kind of knew this was coming down the pike, and that the president really did nothing of substance for weeks, and then all of a sudden this resolution happened. There had been no meaningful debate in Congress at all, no really national dialogue on this other than us saying, why is the president doing nothing? So what actually came out of the Security Council isn't the worst thing. If they had done it a few weeks earlier, the mission would have been a whole lot simpler to do, because Gaddafi was really reeling at that point. I understand at that point maybe they wanted the rebels to try and finish him off so they wouldn't have to get their hands dirty or bloody in any way on this. So there may be that, but this is going to get complicated because of a guy like Saddam Hussein, who's going to fight to the last drop of blood and do whatever he can to make this as ugly as possible. And while we'd like to make this nice and neat, kind of like an air campaign like we saw in the Balkans a little over a decade ago, it may not lead to that. I hope that he allows, if any troops are going onto the ground, that it's troops from other countries, since those countries decided to take the lead on this. You're right. It's probably a better situation than it was had we not done anything, given where Gaddafi's mercenaries and other forces were heading towards Benghazi and so forth, and this might be over by now in a really bad way. but it's unclear exactly how this is going to end, and it could have been handled so much better. So I guess more of my complaint is a little bit in hindsight, as well as the very poorly defined endgame here for us and the entire coalition.
So I think I mentioned on Friday, it says something about Obama that we don't have an entry strategy, we don't have an exit strategy. Hopefully we have a strategy while we're there, but that's not even that's not terribly clear.
True, although we found out that he can also play soccer in addition to basketball. So
it is, yes. You know, it's good to see him playing Pele at a moment of wartime.
Exactly right. On to the bad martini now, and I don't know where you were a year ago today, Jim. I know where I was. I was on my couch watching March Madness because I couldn't stomach the thought of the Democratic-led House at that time passing the worst piece of domestic legislation in my lifetime, that being the president's health care reform plan. And that's 1 year ago today that that happened. Today, we find out that Americans hate it even more than they did on that day. The courts seem to be siding, at least a couple of them, on the side of those who believe the individual mandate is unconstitutional. And if the political winds blow correctly in 2012, there's a chance of actual legislative repeal on this. But the bottom line is they got it done, and the bottom line is, to this point, no court and no legislature has stopped the implementation of this, and given the way that they forced the funding on subsequent Congresses, it's going to be exceedingly difficult to stop that unless the courts intervene. So a dark day a year ago, and it only gets darker as we get closer to 2014.
Pelosi said we have to pass it to see what's in it, and now we see it's crap. It's unpopular crap. Government gives us a lot of stuff we don't like, but this one – it has not grown more popular as time goes by, and there's kind of an interesting item. It was spotlighted on Ace of Spades. Glenn Kessler over at the Washington Post, who's now doing this kind of fact-check feature, notes when discussing the one-year anniversary of Obamacare in the past year, House Democrats appear to show little hesitation about repeating claims that previously have been found to be false or exaggerated, including Pelosi saying that it's going to create 4 million jobs and obviously, Obama famously said, if you like your health insurance, you can keep your health insurance. Pelosi said that it reduces the deficit. I mean, just one example after another. And it's, you know, it says something that they have no new or better arguments in favor of this. I think their only strategy of Democrats is to hope Americans forget about it or that they, you know, other issues overtake it. And maybe the failure of the economy will distract Americans from the failure of the healthcare reform. Or perhaps a failure in foreign policy. It's an innovative approach from Democrats to keep screwing up new areas of policy to distract us from previous screw-ups in policy. We'll see what happens. My guess is I can't imagine a scenario in which this is not a major issue in 2012, maybe secondary to the economy and maybe secondary to some sort of foreign crisis. But all in all, this will be a big issue. And so far, probably a good sign for the Republicans. So, Greg, I think you can notice we could have very easily flipped our martinis today.
That's absolutely right. And you mentioned, you know, the Democrats are still going with the same old talking points, which is absolutely true. The good news on that front is that there are 63 less of them than there were making those same talking points a year ago at this time. So I guess there is a silver lining in the bad martini today. On to number three now, and this kind of takes along the same tack as we did on Friday when we noted the closure of Barack H. Obama Elementary School in Asbury Park, New Jersey, as a result of low enrollment and with funds being scarce. That was the school that had to be closed, effective at the end of the school year. Similarly, the head of Amtrak had to actually get off the train as he was headed to the dedication of the Joseph R. Biden train station in Wilmington, Delaware, because the train broke down in Baltimore. So he had to leave the Amtrak train, get into the car, and go there. And he says, well, you know, it was probably a bad idea for the head of Amtrak to bail at a time of crisis, but it was more important for me to be at the dedication for the vice president.
It's just a week of heavy-handed metaphors, isn't it, Greg? Kind of symbolic. I guess the only thing would be better is if the entire ceremony had run long and been full of crazy, extraneous anecdotes and comments, and that I guess you could say that literally, Greg, literally the head of Amtrak could not get to the ceremony on a train. Literally, you know. That tends to be Joe Biden's famous and favorite word that he uses in all kinds of circumstances. Easily 10% of them are appropriate. Very often it'll be, you know, I literally was bleeding tears over, you know, tears of blood over this. And, you know, or he literally, you know, Barack Obama literally made this country, and, you know, various circumstances in which you just wish somebody would be there to kind of tug on his shoulder and say, Mr. Vice President, no, not literally. To quote the Princess Bride, that word, you keep using it. I'm pretty sure it doesn't mean what you think it means.
Yes, inconceivable that Joe Biden would keep using that word when it clearly is out of context at best and just shows his inability to stay on message or make sense on a free.
Greg, Biden saying this is literally inconceivable.
Exactly right.
We cannot make a baby out of it. That's how it is.
Jim, have a great day. Great start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday at this time for the next 3 Martini Lunch.